Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 17. We're going to talk about the latest news, migration tools, and the latest news on InfoPath.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
All right. How things, AC?
Doing all right. I'm actually trying to recover from an injury that I've had on my leg. I'm training for a half marathon that's about a week and a half away. And I've done something to where it feels like I have a racquetball that's stuffed into my hip, right about where your pockets are for your jeans. So I'm doing everything I can, all kinds of therapy and stuff to try rest and therapy to get it knocked out. But that and battling a head cold, it's not really bad timing for both of these things to happen a week and a half out from a half marathon.
ouch. That sounds painful.
Yeah.
Painful. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. At the same time, trying to get a bunch of work done, right? So I'm sure I'm going to sound a little strange, but I apologize.
Well, as much as you need to be in great shape for your half marathon, you also need to be in great shape for SharePoint conference coming up. So hopefully a speedy recovery for both.
I need it. So how about you? You still down under, huh?
I am indeed. I'm in New Plymouth right now, which is a city in New Zealand, visiting some family down here, but enjoying the holiday so far. We're doing a bunch of running around, so we're moving around a lot, and that obviously takes a bunch of effort with kids, but we're having a blast while we're down here, so it's been a great vacation.
Very cool. So I guess that's why we might hear a little bit of family in the background here and there. So
yeah, apologies for the screaming children.
No worries. I'll just apologize for all the coughing that I might end up doing. So
yeah. Well, hopefully you don't have to run around your office and use that the gammy leg you got. So hopefully you'll be all right. So today's episode, we have a little bit of news to cover. We're going to talk a little bit about some migration topics, and then the sort of the meat in the sandwich, so to speak, for this episode is going to be about InfoPath and the news that we heard about that over the past week or so. And so we want to dig in a little bit into that and what it means for SharePoint and what we're going to see coming from Microsoft in the future, and talk a little bit about that.
Sounds good.
So why don't we start with some news?
All right. Sounds good. So what you got for us to lead us off?
I think the big one that I saw in the last few days that really is interesting is support for multi-factor authentication in Office 365 natively. And so there's a blog post that we'll link to up in the show notes that describes this in great detail. But in a nutshell, for those who don't know what multi-factor authentication is, it's basically the ability to enforce people to log in, or when they're logging in to a system, to require two forms of authentication, two or more forms of authentication. So, for example, in the past, you might log into a website using just a username and a password, for example. But what multi-factor authentication enforces is the need to provide another form of authentication as well as your username and password. So that could be something like a special code that gets sent to you via text message, or maybe the system calls you on a well-known cell phone number or mobile phone number or something along those lines. People have been familiar with this from their banking systems. Also, other systems like Facebook and Twitter support multi-factor authentication already. And if you haven't turned that on your Facebook and Twitter accounts, I highly recommend doing so. Mm. It basically stops the brute force password hacks or password breach issues with websites. So if somebody gets your password, it's not that big a deal. Well, it is still a big deal, but it's not that big a deal. And so it basically stops them from logging into the system. They'd need to be sent a code via text or a call or something like that to complete the login process. And so what this means is now that in Office 365 you can also turn this on, and you don't need to. In the past you could achieve this but it required a whole lot of other infrastructure and setup. And now it's supported right out of the box in 365.
Yeah, it's becoming the new standard, I think, for authentication identity into important services. I mean, everywhere that you look now, you definitely want to, when it's offered, it's almost a reason. There's almost no reason why you would not want to have this in terms of an extra level of security. There's so many stories I've heard recently about where this wasn't applied and it would have really saved some people, like the really popular story in Wired magazine by, I think his name is Pat Honan, how he got hacked through social engineering between Amazon and Apple, and how someone stole his Twitter account and then also remotely wiped both of his laptops and his phone. Because you can do that with the Mac OS. You can do that remote wipe the same way we can do it with like iPhone or Windows phone or anything. I don't think that Windows 8 has the ability for a remote wipe yet. But I even saw something this past week too, where do you see the thing about the guy that got extorted for $50,000 for his Twitter handle?
Yeah, I did. That was freakishly scary.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I learned a lot from that one too. Or I guess he didn't get extorted for it. He lost his Twitter handle that people had been trying to buy from him for $50,000. Someone was able to hijack a bunch of his assets, and they said, if you turn the Twitter handle over, I will give you the passwords to all your domains that I've hijacked, and GoDaddy, and your email, and all this other stuff, and your Twitter, and your Facebook account as well. And then I'll also tell you how I did it. So I think his Twitter handle was just @T or something like that.
No, wasn't it @N?
@N, that's right, @N.
@N, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's nuts. I mean, I guess the one thing I learned was that, let's say you have all your domains at a hoster. Let's just pick GoDaddy just for instance, but it really doesn't matter who it is. They say don't use your custom domain as the account for logging in and managing stuff at GoDaddy. Mm. They said instead use a service where it's going to be much harder for them to compromise, like a Gmail or a Yahoo or a Hotmail or Outlook, one of those kind of email addresses. And I'm looking at, like, because if someone was able to hijack or get access to your GoDaddy account, then you probably have your email, your domain is also inside of your GoDaddy account. And so now they've got the ability to change the way that people are going to be logging into your email and everything, because they can change the MX records and such.
Gotcha. That's frightening. It takes... Just, I mean, certainly at the DNS level, like at GoDaddy, getting access to that through some sort of social engineering hack or just, you know, whoever that happens, that's frightening, because once you've got control of a vanity domain like that, you can pretty much do anything you like.
It's one of those things that you think you're totally secure, and then all of a sudden you turn around and someone says, yeah, I got access to this, and they're like, holy crap.
Oops!
How did you like? Nobody can launch the nuclear missiles unless you know that you have the code, the president's code. Oh, that's really good. Well, how do they do it? Oh, he's the only one that's got the codes. We're all good. Fantastic. How does he do it? He's got this thing called the football. Well, I have the football now, and everybody's like, "Oh crap! He's got the football."
Yeah.
So
we're all doomed.
it's interesting. It's you know, we knew it was going to happen eventually. We'll see more of these big compromises and hacks like we see at places like Target and other ones. But the multi-factor auth. I saw that come out, and it was kind of like, you know, good on you for going through and actually leading the way and putting this in. I haven't set it up on my account yet, but it's something that I definitely need to go through and set up with Office 365. It's something I'd recommend everybody use it.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. It's I have it on for Twitter and Facebook, and although it's a little bit painful when you go to log in from a new computer and you've got to put the code in and all that sort of stuff, you just have to remind yourself that it's protecting you against these things.
Yeah. All you got to do is just like, you know, God, it's such a pain to do backups. And then that one time that you don't test your backups, or you wish you had your backup, you're like, you know what?
Oh yeah.
It's worth it.
Once you've gone through that painful, painful process once, you'll never complain about it again.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So MFA can be turned on in 365 for all users now. It used to be just for administrative people, but now it's for all users. And you can make it do things like call your phone, a phone that's obviously registered, a phone number that's registered to that user in their profile. They can send a text message. What else we got here? We've got Call my office phone, so that's another number it can call. Notify me through app and show me one-time code in-app. So there's an app that you can go and get for Windows Phone, iPhone, and Android devices that sort of help assist with this process. The interesting thing is that this is all built on technology that Microsoft acquired a wee while back called Phone Factor, I believe, was the acquisition. And this is being used in all sorts of different places now, in places like Azure Active Directory and all that. That's all tied up into this. So hence now it's sort of starting to flow through into apps that take advantage of that, and Office 365 being one of those. It's pretty cool technology. The one sort of painful caveat to this right now is that the Office applications don't understand MFA. And so you need to go and generate these things called app passwords, which are kind of, I think Twitter has these as well for applications that don't understand the multi-factor auth. You go create a sort of a password per application or an app password, and then you can use that as a password to log in, and it gets around MFA.
Yeah, that was one frustrating thing I saw from it. I've seen this implemented in another way, and I really like what Facebook has done with this. I don't know if you've seen this, but if you have – so Facebook, you set up the multi-factor auth. You can set it up to text your phone and get a password on your phone. Other ones like Dropbox, they have – there's something called the Google Authenticator or Validator that's an app that you can put on your phone and get it. I know Dropbox uses that one. I can't remember. There's somebody else I have that uses that. But what Facebook does – is that they'll, they do the same thing. You go to log in. It said, we just sent you a code, plug the code in, you get your phone out, you put the code in. Everything's all beautiful. But what if you're on a app or a device that doesn't have that kind of capability and it just has the login ability? Well, for example, I use OS X, I use Mac OS, and there's a, on Mac OS, there's an app called iMessage. And, what I can do inside iMessage is, aside from just doing normal texting with people who have that are also on iMessage, is I can set up connections to things like Gmail or whatever and chat through that app. But it also allows me to connect that app to Facebook. So when someone's sending me a message, I can write back to them straight from iMessage. It's pretty cool. It comes like a text. Well, it has no idea what multi-factor auth is. So the way that Facebook did it is they said, we're going to send you the you log in with username and password. We're going to send you the code via text. Now, if you're going through the Jabber protocol, which is how I connect to Facebook messages through iMessage, it basically just Facebook says, okay, the next time you have to put your password in, it has to be the code. So I log in the first time and it says, I don't understand who you are, but when it responds, it sends me the code. And then when I get the code in the text message that came from Facebook, it even says, use this inside of iMessage. Use this code as your password inside of iMessage, but only do it one time. After you do it that one time, you're good to come in with your normal password.
Gotcha. That's so, kind of the same as an app password though, right? So the way it works on app passwords is you generate that code, right? You say, I want a code to use for that app. And then you plug that into the password field.
But you'd have to do that for every app though, right? That's the thing that's different about this is that I don't have to set anything up ahead of time. I still get the text like I normally would. It's just that the first time I try to log in, it fails. Second time I put the PIN number in, it succeeds, and then I'm in.
Yeah. So the difference here is you have to go set up your app password first.
Yeah.
As opposed to just trying to log in.
It's just a different implementation. It's just as secure. I like the Facebook one just because there's nothing extra to remember.
Yeah, so. Nice. I see that there's a subtle difference there, but it would definitely be handier doing it that way.
Yep. Cool.
Cool, yeah. So some other news. Power BI for Office 365 is out. I don't know if you – have you used this at all, AC?
I haven't. I've seen a lot of people talking about it, but I haven't played with it yet.
It's pretty cool. So it's all about basically data visualization and being able to do interesting things with your data and find things in your data that you haven't found before. And so It's built out, I believe it's built by the SQL team at Microsoft that were responsible for things like PowerView and Power Query and things like that in Excel previously. But it's a service that's for Office 365. It's going to be a paid-for service, as I understand it. And they're running some sort of promo at the moment where I think it's $20 a user or something like that. But basically, it lets you you know, query over data using natural language. I don't know if you've seen a demo of that, but it's pretty slick. You can say things like, you know, how many widgets have I, you know, gotten this data set or in across these states, or and just sort of type in your question and it'll figure out from your data how to query it and go and pull those results back. It's pretty impressive when you see it running.
Is this happens to be the same? This is the same thing that happened at the Worldwide Partner Conference, the WPC, last summer, and the guy that was demoing this, when he was all talking about BI and data visualizations, and at the very end, he did something in the place, and the place just blew up. It was one of the most amusing. You have to watch it's an 18-minute clip. Yeah. We got to find the link and put this in the show notes. But what was it like?
It's the epic. The most epic demo I think I've seen in quite some time.
It's like an 18. If we'll put the link in the show notes, but okay, for those of you who are listening, you've got to watch the whole thing. It's about I believe it's like 18 minutes long. You've got to watch the whole thing, and the last like couple minutes, it just builds up, and it's kind of like imagine like a hockey stick kind of bar chart on the excitement level, and so things are kind of like are just going okay, this is interesting, and then all of a sudden it just goes sky high, gets to be hilarious, and the thing finishes and the guy runs off the stage and everyone's like, oh my god, they're laughing like crazy. And
yeah, it was funny. I was actually I was in the audience for it, and and it's funny because, you know, WPC, it's the Worldwide Partner Conference for all the Microsoft partners and so forth around the world. And you get all the Microsoft execs on stage and they're doing the big rah-rah. And then the guy comes out and he's talking about data and everybody's sitting there thinking, oh God, this is going to be a car crash, right? Who wants to talk about data and querying data in a keynote? And the guy nailed it. And people were on their feet and clapping and yahooing, and it was a real hoot. So it was a great demo, actually. Yeah, I think Power BI did feature as part of that. It was a whole bunch of different demos, but I think that was part of it. They were showcasing some of the early work. But yeah, so I believe you can go and add it to your Office 365 subscription, if I'm not mistaken, today. I could be wrong on that. If not, very shortly, and go play around with it. But it gives you the ability to do some pretty interesting graphing and visualizations of data over maps and so forth, in interesting new ways, and present that to users, and then also sort of the natural language querying of your data. So what else we got? We had an announcement not long ago. I saw from the Azure team about more Oracle software being supported on Azure, including Java, Oracle Database, and Oracle WebLogic Server being available in the image gallery up in Windows Azure. So not exactly my cup of tea, but I'm sure somebody will be excited about this.
Yeah, same here. It's interesting. It's definitely nice to have this as an option for customers that want to use Oracle software on Azure. It's kind of a funny thing. Looking back 10 years, we ever seen a partnership like this. But it's a good offering to have, because standing up Oracle and configuring the software is definitely one tricky thing. I know there's plenty of consultants that probably would not be too happy about this.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, maybe I'm wrong on this, and maybe we can have somebody from AWS give us a call and correct us if this is not the right comment here. But I don't think the Oracle stack is supported on AWS.
That's a good question. I don't know.
I think that's quite a selling point on Azure for any Oracle shop. I could be completely mistaken by that. Don't quote me on it, but maybe somebody from AWS will give us a call and chime in and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Actually, anybody from AWS that wants to call and have a chat, I'd love to.
To have somebody, give us a call and chime in. Hell, we'll interview you on the show. So yeah, get in touch.
Absolutely.
And then finally, I saw a little tidbit that said 53% of Fortune 500 companies are using Windows Azure now.
That's very cool.
Which is, yeah, they're obviously seeing a bunch of really interesting and strong adoption, which is great to see. And, you know, they've, you know, Azure, I think, we all know is the underdog. So they've got a lot of catch up to do, obviously, but it's great to see them making strides like this.
Mm-hmm. Agree. It's good. It's definitely good to see. I mean, it was definitely a big, it's definitely becoming a much more viable platform for lots and lots of people. I'm a fan. I mean, I'm absolutely a fan of it. It's nice to see many companies jumping on board. And you saw, what was it? Something like a billion customers are using stuff inside of Azure. That was a stat that they put up, I think, at TechEd or at Build last year.
Wow.
It was some number that when you looked at it, or how much, I don't know, I'm grasping at straws, but I don't know, you see a business that went from being non-existent a couple of years ago to now, you know, we learned that it's a $70 billion a year business with the recent CEO change that they had. They say it's a $70 billion business coming from their Azure business. So that's
crazy numbers.
You add a billion here, a billion there, it starts to add up. So,
yeah. Okay, so that is the news. Migration. So I had I read an interesting article over the last couple of weeks about a migration story that I thought people might find interesting, about migrating from Google and Google, you know, specifically Gmail and Google Apps through to Office 365. So we'll link to this up in the show notes. But I thought it was a really interesting read because it's also from a small technology company who wanted to do this for, you know, little to no cost, I guess. And they wanted to do it on their own without engaging with a partner to do it. And so I thought that, you know, there might be other small businesses or other sort of small one or two band technology consultants and so forth that might be on Google right now and considering Office 365, but are concerned about the migration cost or, you know, the effort required. And so there's a company in New Zealand called Marker Metro. They're a shop that basically build apps, what we used to call Metro apps, but now apps for things like Windows Phone and Windows 8. And they moved from Google to Office 365, and they've written up an interesting blog post about it, just about how they did it and what their process was and how straightforward it was in migrating all their mail and the tools that Office 365 provide to help do these things. So we'll link up to that in the show notes. But you know, you've been through a bunch of migration stuff as well over the years. What are a couple of things you found?
I found this article to be really interesting. It hit a lot of the points too that you know you see in most migrations. I've done some stuff around. I migrated all of my stuff from other hosted platforms over into Office 365, and it went really smooth. I guess the one thing that I would like to see, it'd be nice to have for Microsoft, is to some things that make it a little bit easier to migrate your mail from another hosted Exchange server into Office 365. But I can understand why they wouldn't want to provide that, because you've got partners and you're taking business from partners. But there's some third parties that are set up really nicely. I was really surprised how easily some of those migrations went. From the SharePoint side of the migrations, I mean, those are just, that's like any other migration, right? It really just depends on what the customer has done, what kind of migration it is. For me, everything was in a content database. I didn't do much stuff with custom code or anything. I tried to keep it as simple as possible, and that made sure that everything came across nice and clean. The more custom code you got, the more chance you got for challenges. So,
No, absolutely. Anyway, we'll link off to that in the show notes. People can have a read. It's a pretty short read and pretty straightforward, easy to understand. So, like I said, we'll point people at that and they can take a look.
Yep.
But one thing you touched on there is, you know, migrating from other mail systems and so forth. And, you know, Microsoft provides some tools for that. But like you said, there are other partners that also build tools. And one that I'm familiar with and looked into quite a lot is a company called Skykick. They're based in Seattle. Actually, the CEO used to work on the SharePoint team, Evan Richmond. So shout out to Evan. And they build some pretty kick-ass tools, I got to say. Their whole deal is their tool is built for partners to use. So it's not necessarily an end-user tool. But basically, it's full service. So you rock up there, you plug in your email address, and it starts doing, I guess what word am I looking for here? DNS interrogation. So it'll find out who you're currently hosted with, where all your email resides and so forth. And then it will do things like you provide an admin username and a password to log in, a username and a password for somebody who has admin privileges with your current provider, and it starts doing interrogation of your organization. So it'll find all the mailboxes, it'll find any distribution lists and things like that, and it's able to start the orchestration process of migrating people by doing things like emailing each of those users and saying, hey, we're getting ready to migrate you. We would like you to go to this site, click this link, and plug in your username and password, and we'll be able to automatically migrate you across. And it'll migrate your mail. It does it from, all these different providers like Hotmail and Gmail and Exchange as well, obviously, and things like that. And then to finish it off, one of the last steps in a migration is usually cutover of DNS. So, when you're ready to shift to your new provider, you change your DNS settings so that all new mail starts flowing to the new crowd. And they also automate changing your DNS records as well, which is fascinating. So they basically are able to, if you want them to, they can automate logging into your DNS provider and changing your DNS records to point to the new Office 365 stuff. So if you're not that comfortable with doing those sorts of things, then they can automate the process end to end. And they also have a nifty little tool that users can download and install on their desktops that you can prompt users to go and install. And it does things like an inventory of their machine. It checks patch levels, it checks Office versions, all that sort of stuff. And can help, get those end machines up to snuff, ready to use Office 365, which I thought was pretty cool as well. So we'll link off to Skykick in the show notes. They're an interesting partner doing interesting things in the Office 365 space. And if I'm not mistaken, I've actually got a deal on at the moment for partners wanting to get into migration and some pretty interesting financial incentives and offers for using their tools to migrate people to 365.
Very cool. Again, that's a good resource.
Yeah, lots going on in the migration space.
Very cool.
I need to use them for my mother, actually. My mother has a commercial property management business, and like a lot of small businesses, they have an IT guy that sort of does stuff that they think is magic, and they really don't understand. And so I turned up at their office the other day and found that they'd been migrated to Google Mail. And they use Outlook on the front end and so forth. But they've got Google on the back end. And I was thinking, this will not last.
It's funny. You see so many people that have moved over to Google Apps, and then God, are two or three different municipalities where I heard that people started missing meetings left and right and started losing things. And they finally were like, you know what? Forget it. And they switched over to Office 365. So,
yeah. So my parents had it all switched out from underneath them. They were on some ISP previously. It wasn't very good. So I'm sure Google's much better than what they had. But obviously, living in a Microsoft house, that ain't going to survive long. Right, so moving right along, the meaty topic of conversation today is based around some news that we heard from the Office 365 team around InfoPath and the news that that the future of InfoPath got slightly more, I guess dead. What's the right word, documented. I think this has been on the cards for quite some time, but we saw a blog post come out this this past week, I believe, it sort of made that a whole bunch more solid. So what was your take on that, AC?
So I think it's nice to have them come out and say it. That basically what they said was that from what Microsoft announced was that there will not be any more future versions of InfoPath, that InfoPath is effectively done.
Shock, horror.
Yeah, exactly. it is, they are, it's still supported for another 10 years, so it's still out there. But so it's not like if you have investments right now, you're going to be, you know, having a lot of problems with it or anything. Things are going to work just fine. But, you know, what they said then is they said, you know, if you want to find more information about what our forum story is going forward, you know, it'll be discussed at the SharePoint conference at a session where we talk about it. And that's all they really said. So, you know, we saw some people jump the gun and try and start saying some things pretty forceful, both mostly on the negative about this. I think it's a bit too early to jump the gun. Kind of validates what, you know, what you and I were thinking. I know I had a blog post a couple months ago that, you know, that, or maybe sometime last year, and then you jumped in on it. I had keep getting the question, what do you think about InfoPath? What do you think about InfoPath? And finally got the question one morning again on Twitter. And I was like, you know what? I'm having trouble focusing today. I'm just going to say what I think. So I put the blog post out, and now I've gotten two or three people from inside Microsoft that said, oh, you're apparently the one, you're the InfoPath killer. I'm like, I didn't kill it. I thought that you guys did a good enough job on your own, but as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason why you would put, I would not, I guess, just to sum it up is that if you have existing investments with InfoPath, you don't have to rush and start ripping them out. If you're on a project right now where you've planned to use InfoPath and you are using it, you have to evaluate how far are we down the road? What are my other options? Does it make sense to pivot and do something else? If you have not started a project, I would personally exclude it from consideration and I would look to something else. What would I look to? There's loads of options. If you want to go commercial, kind of off the shelf kind of stuff, Nintex has a fantastic offering with Nintex Forms. K2 has an option as well with their Forms product as well. They both serve different audiences. They're positioned slightly differently. I don't want to take a side on either one of them, but I've got my preference, but they're both really good options. But then the other option is that it really, the reason why InfoPath is dead, at least in my mind, is that the market has ruled that XML-based forms are done. They're not going to work. It's not going to cut it for what we need. What the new model is, and is still kind of evolving, but if we're looking for some sort of a web-based form, which all forms really need to be web-based, they don't need to be client-based, so they need to be web-based. So how are you going to do that? Well, the whole Bootstrap model is a pretty popular way of doing it. Really, it's as easy as going and finding a fairly inexpensive web developer to say, build a form, and I really need that form to submit to some web service. Ideally, it's a RESTful service, or it spits data out in some sort of a JSON format. So, and that, I mean, you can find any outsourced developer that can go through and do that for relatively cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, I think, you know, one thing I sort of took away, or that I get reminded of whenever I see news like this is just the gut reaction people have to it. So, you know, you see one piece of news that say, hey, we're retiring a particular piece of technology because we're going to come out with something different. And suddenly the sky's falling. People are just, I'm often reminded, and it seems, I shouldn't be surprised by it anymore because it happens so often, but the reaction of people just stuns me. Like I get that people are attached to things, but when Microsoft says that they're deprecating something, they don't mean that they're walking it out onto the street, putting it on its knees and shooting it in the back of the head, and that it drops dead and buried on the street right in front of you. They sort of mean that it's, you know, hey, they're going to come out with something else or are no longer interested in improving a particular thing that they invested in, you know, two releases, three releases ago. But yeah, that doesn't mean they're just going to drop it dead and run for the hills, right? Like if you've got stuff that runs on it, like you said, right, it's going to continue running and they're going to continue supporting you. But you might want to think about it if you're coming out with new projects, because like you said, there are tons of great alternatives.
That was a hell of a visualization. All I could think about was just someone walking Sandbox out to the street and just putting a gun to the back of their head and just be like, this is what we really want to do.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of things like that people would love to put a bullet in. But yeah, I just, you know, the gut reaction of people, I just feel is quite over the top sometimes and kind of overreactionary. Like there's a natural sort of path for technology over time, and things need to get improved and retired and things like that. So I guess like Sandbox, same sort of thing, right? We saw, oh God, all hell and fury is being rained down on the SharePoint world when that happened. But I was like, meh, you know.
Yeah, big deal.
We move forward. Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess InfoPath for me was, you know, it wasn't a surprise because we've been talking about this for some time about what's happening with it. It was very obvious that not a lot had changed to InfoPath in a number of years. And so it was only a naturally a moment in time that this would come. But like the blog post said, it was, you know, they're obviously cooking something else up. So I look forward to hearing news about that.
Yeah, likewise. I am too. We'll see what they have to say. I'm just hoping that what we see at the SharePoint conference is something that we can all be excited about. We get some news. We know where they're going. I'm hoping that at SharePoint conference, it's not a, look, all we really did was just decide and come out and officially say that the forums story with InfoPath is dead and, you know, here's some stopgap measures. I hope we really see something because, you know, I really hate it when other people do this and I'm about to do it. But it's when, you know, you don't really have any information really to base this on. You just kind of make something up here. You know, back at the SharePoint conference last time, I'm going to go ahead and do it and I'm probably going to hate myself for doing this. At the SharePoint conference in 2012, you had people walking up to people on the SharePoint team and asking about the forum story. And they all, you know, were kind of really beating around the bush. When they specifically were asking about InfoPath, they all just kept beating around the bush and they weren't really giving an answer.
Nothing to see here.
And they said, well, you need to really think about what you're using forums for and how you're doing it. Da-da-da. It's like, you don't have a story. Just come out and say it. InfoPath is dead and you don't know what you're doing yet. Just, I'll take that. There's nothing on the stock exchange that says InfoPath that is going to sit there and tank a stock or anywhere. So what I would like to do is I would like for them to just come out and say, you know, what the deal is with it. Well, we kind of just strung along a little bit, and now they come out and say, oh, InfoPath is dead. I'm like, this is really news? I guess, you know, my feedback was, you know, it was to when we saw this announcement come out, I kind of looked at some people at Microsoft and they said, what do you think? And I was like, why now? Why do you say this now? Because all it's really going to stir up is talk like this, talk like what you and I are doing right now for the next month and a half from when it came out, for the next month and a half before the SharePoint conference, before we really know anything. So why now? So hopefully we see a reason why, but you know, it just remains to be seen. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm interested in seeing what is said at SPC, that is for sure. You know, I sort of think of it as the same as the Sandbox, right? Like, it was clear to me that Sandbox code was going to be deprecated and gone at some point in the future, and just because there are alternatives now, and or at least potential alternatives that that seem to be the focus. And so, you know, same sort of thing with InfoPath. Writing was on the wall. And so that shouldn't be news to anybody. Mm-mm. But you know, I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I think you know, if people are using InfoPath today, that's Microsoft have got a good history of support, you know, sort of for the 8 to 10 year range, and so they'll continue to do that. And you know, and then based on what comes out at SPC, you can start making some decisions for future projects and things. And then, you know, there are, like you said, there are great partner products too, Nintex Forms and so forth, that offer pretty robust solutions today that that people can also take a look at. You know, they're paid for products, of course, but, you know, you also get what you pay for. They're pretty great set of tools. So they're definitely worth looking at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool.
Excellent.
Stuff.
Excellent. So yeah, I guess stay tuned for another show. We'll do some wrap up news of SPC, hopefully, and we might have more news on this.
Absolutely. And before we break too, while you were talking about one of the earlier topics when you went through some of the news, I found the video. I can't remember the guy's name. I think it's AJ Mee, but I found the video from WPC. It's only 11 minutes. It gets interesting when he switches talking about sales data and switching over to music and talking about artists. And
oh, yes.
That's at about the 6.5 to 6:50 minute mark. But the last, I was just blazing through the video really quick, and I saw that it was right around like the last 4 or 5 minutes is when it just gets going on, and it's absolutely hilarious. So we'll make sure to put a link up for this. I could only find a link to the actual MP4 that's on the historical WPC site. I thought there was one on YouTube, but I'll make sure that link's in the notes so people can go ahead and grab that.
You know, that is funny because that's pretty much the only demo I remember from that keynote. So it's so it was definitely memorable.
Oh, it was just that was yeah, it was epic. His energy was awesome, but
yeah, that was funny. Excellent. All right, so yeah, we'll throw a link up to the notes. But yeah, thanks again, AC.
Thank you, and until next time.
Indeed.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.